Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. And opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Gold's dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency.
Good evening, good evening, good evening, brothers and sisters. This is Brother Davis coming at you. And we are going to have an excellent show tonight. How do I know? Because I envisioned it. You see, the image in my mind, I will transform into my voice to help you understand the importance of the image in your mind. Because, see, every idea, every invention, every category of growth first starts in the imagination. That's right. So when we see ourselves through our mind's eye, we can prepare ourselves to do and take on the tasks that are before us. Now, for some of you who are looking at this here from the standpoint of how does that work for me, it's an excellent place to be. The position that you are in allows you to visualize yourself in a level and in a way no one else can. What do I mean by that? I mean, when you see yourself being constructed, you can attain those things that you envision through that process. And see, the best part about that is that we are at a point in our lives now where our imagination is the trampoline of our success. That's right. So we must learn to not just look at life through our mind's eye and look at it as being trivial, because in reality, it isn't. You see, everything that emanates from you starts in your imagination. Even if you just raise your hand in the air, there has to be a thought to stimulate that process for the working functions of your body to raise your hand in the air. Every time we go in to understanding a greater portion of ourselves, we look at it as being a task. It is not a task. The task is simplicity. That's right. The world was designed with simplicity in mind because it did not want your thinking process to be difficult for you. It wanted your thinking process to be in harmony with the universe, to produce a result based on your concept of how to bring forth your idea. That's right. So, in these times that are about to come upon us, we have to be able to master certain aspects of ourselves. What are those aspects of ourselves? Those aspects of ourselves may be how we breathe. They may be what we're trying to do at a particular time. Say you're jogging and you're trying to do a mile. You have to see yourself completing this mile. In order to do that, you have to open your mind's eye so that your goal can be achieved. Imagination is one of the pillars of every individual's success, not just yours. So do you have a market on it? Absolutely not. Is it personable? Absolutely. Because guess what? You might think of an idea today and just think of the basics of applying that. But because of the way your imagination works, you might go to bed that night and dream of another attribute to the original idea, and before you know it, you've expanded on your original concept based on the imagination that is taking place in your mind's eye. So, it's not a lot of work. Let me precedent it right away. It is not a lot of work. What it is it requires you to focus on self. We've been here already, my brothers and sisters. We've been here trying to understand the importance of taking control of our lives, of being responsible for not only what we're doing, but for the things we are trying to achieve. All of these things play a role in our success. And what we want to do is, regardless of what pressure or endeavors that are upon us, we want to attain success so that they can become a part of our testimony in those particular endeavors. So that is why imagination and how we perceive ourselves plays such a major role in what we do. So let's look at some basic, simple things, okay? Remember when you was a child and you played sports, how you would imagine yourself that day, whether it be baseball, volleyball, wall ball, marbles. It always took an image in your mind for you to be able to set up your reaction. What is your reaction? What if the ball is hit to you? What if the ball is thrown to you? What happens when your turn comes around? You see, it's always served a purpose for you, but you may not have seen it as a tool. You might have seen it as just, oh, that's just what's on my mind. Well, what is on your mind emanates your energy process. And see, since we are spirit and we are energy, our thoughts are the first aspect of controlling that energy process. So that's what makes our aspects of imagination such an important part. And the reason why is because we need to see clearly to achieve that goal that we set before ourselves. All right, that jump shot that you're taking, you need to see clearly how that ball is going to be released out of your hand. You already hear the shook at the end, but you have to see in your mind how this ball takes flight from your hand into the basket. So we've always used our imagination. We just never use them according to the proper usage. You see, the proper usage means that you were taught to some degree how to use it to your advantage and then could cultivate that aspect of how to use it to your advantage. And there was a reason why Westernism doesn't teach that. To give you the short story, you have four brains. You have the left hemisphere, the right hemisphere. You have the frontal lobe and the cerebral. Okay? The left hemisphere, literally, is analytical. Absolutely. And that's why you see most Europeans think with the left hemisphere of their brain. Because they like to see it in numbers. They like to see it in lines. They like to be able to sit back and say, because I apply this process with these numbers, I achieve this result, and I, by explaining the process to you, you can do the same. Which literally and figuratively makes sense. But the right side of the brain thinkers are more imaginative in their creative process, in their learning process. And the reason being is because they think beyond the parameters of a process. Now, what does that mean? That means that if I'm at a stage right now where I'm being challenged because of my insight into my imagination, I can separate the challenge from my victory because my mind is telling my body I must rise. Okay, so now I want you to visualize this, y'all. We're in a 100-yard dash, and by the time we're hitting 50, we're neck and neck. Okay, I can't look over without taking my focus off where I'm going, but I can hear that this footsteps are almost mirroring mine. And we're getting closer now. We're hitting that 55 mark. We know you got 54, you got 45 more yards to go. So in your mind's eye, you already see the ribbon up there. You know the goal is to crest the ribbon so that you can be the point of the ribbon's flow. See, that's how you know you won. So now what your mind is doing is your mind is starting to move quicker. In other words, to cover the distance at a quicker pace. So if the mind is moving to cover the distance at a quicker pace, the energy has now stepped up. So the energy that's being initiated in the imagination is starting to take over the muscular structure and push you harder than you were running previously, because now you hear in your side of your ear that competitor is right shoulder to shoulder. But as your mind and your imagination forces your energy to take control over your body, all of a sudden that sound gets faint and that ribbon gets close, and all of a sudden, that is it. You have broke the ribbon at the point in which the ribbon sees you as the leader. Be first. The image in your mind has now been transformed into your life. Now, I hope you caught all of that, because that I'm giving it to you in a friendly, competitive surrounding. Now, let's look at it from a slightly different point of view. Okay? It's 11:30 at night. You probably is over your sister's house or your brother's house, have dinner, sit back, have some conversation about the family, and things are going good. And you look over at your sister and say, you know what, sis, I enjoyed being with your family tonight. I'm going home to prepare myself for the day tomorrow. So you go outside, jump in your car, not even thinking about it. You know, it's a routine. All right. So you throw your key in and you're riding down the road and you want to turn on the music, so you lean over. The car swerves a little bit. You don't think much about it. You turn your music on. You're going down the road, and 30 seconds later, you see a red light in your rear window. The dynamics have just changed. Now, you already know that this can be a circumstance that you may not live through if you are not fully function. So now you're picturing yourself looking for the brightest spot to pull over. So you literally put your emergencies on so you can signal to the red light that you identified. You're just looking for the right spot to pull over. Now, the reason why you're doing this is because that would serve your purpose to be in clear view of everybody or anybody that travels along that road. You see, once again, now your imagination is taking over and your thought process is starting to energize what you want to achieve out of it. Okay? So you pull it over and you know the light just pulling through the window, okay? So the first thing you do is you put your hands on the steering wheel. Why do you put your hands on the steering wheel? Because you know, your mind's eye has already told you there's a greater chance than not that there's going to be two officers. So when they one approaches you on your passenger side, only to look in, of course, to make sure that the one that approaches you on your driver's side has backup. So you sit there keeping your hands on the steering wheel. Why? Because they're in plain view of both officers. Okay? So now when the officer comes to the window, you look at him, he looks at you, and he gestures to put your window down. You see the dynamics that are involved here, my brothers and sisters. We can no longer allow the programming that we've been under to function. We have to function. So you're thinking already, okay, what your wording has to be in order so this officer does not become uncomfortable. Because, see, now you should already know by now that when you get emotional, they get fearful. And if you don't know, I'm telling you now, you have been programmed to be emotional people in their eyes. So you must literally change the dynamic of their thinking, because you know when they approach your car, they all got one hand on their gun. So when the officer comes to the window and he gestures to roll the window down, you keep your right hand on the steering wheel so it's in plain sight. You move your left hand to the car crank or window crank, and you crank it down. Only crank it down about 3 inches. The next thing out your mouth is, "Good evening, officer." Now, the reason why is because now your mind's eye has taken a certain degree of awareness of everything. Understand this. If you turn around and look at the cop behind you, you're going to appear suspicious to this person who is already scared of you in any way. So he'll say to you, "Can I have your license and registration?" Which is a routine. Say, "Yes, sir. I'm reaching for my license and my registration. And actually, I have it right here on my dashboard." See, once again, you're thinking through your circumstance. Okay? Now, why is it on your dashboard? Because when the light first hits you, your mind should tell you, put everything where every movement you make must be clear to the person who is stopping you. Because that officer over your corner that you can't see can also have an excuse. And nowadays, they don't really even need them. So you have to create the scenario in your mind's eye of exactly what the result that you want. So you pull your license and your registration out, and you say, "Pardon me, officer, why did you pull me over?" Because it's a question of it clears the thought process. All right? So the officer says, "Well, I seen you swerve back here about 2 minutes ago." Now, you already know why you swerved. So let's not read or project more to the officer than necessary. So what you should say at this time is say, "Yes, sir." Because, see, now he's trying to figure out, did you swerve because you're intoxicated? Because you only put your window down 3 inches. He really can't get any smell whether you have any alcohol on you or not. And that really serves your purpose. So he's literally taking apart everything you say to his advantage. So as you hand it to him, you make sure that you hand it to him between two fingers, your index finger and your middle finger, and hold them tightly so when he takes them, he has both of them at the same time. So before he parts, he shines his light in your car. Now, he's doing these things to trigger you. Make no mistake. Because you are already sensitive about it. You may not have anything to hide, but if you react in a negative manner, according to his interpretation, you become the victim. And the sad part about that is that this is the time when you can determine you are not going to be a victim. So he walks away from the car. Make no mistake, the other car officer is still on the other side of the car because he's looking at you in the vehicle looking for a strange move. Now, this may seem to be a little bit methodical, but we have lost brothers and sisters for less. So we must understand that the imaginative image in your mind must have the durability to not only adjust in this circumstance, but to see yourself going through the front door of your home. You see, all of these things play a role. So now you're starting to get a little perturbed because the officer takes 6-7 minutes. Then he comes back up and he says, have you been drinking? Now, if you had a beer or so, tell him. Say, well, I was over at my sister's house. I had a beer about an hour ago. Now, he's going to get you out the car for a DUI test. Here's the catch about a DUI test. If you breathe into something, now they can interpret it. But if you physically demonstrate it, there's no reason for you to have to breathe in anything. But you must see yourself through these things. Because ultimately, at the end, he could ask you to breathe in something anyway. So you really have to be focused on not letting this person hit one of your triggers. So your imagination right now should be preparing you for if it comes to that, okay? So he comes back to the car and he says, could you step out the car, please? At this point, you ask, is there a specific reason, officer? And he'll say, well, I asked you to step out the car. Say, well, can I roll my window down? And he'll probably say yes. What you're doing is you're giving him a chance to see or smell that there's no alcohol on you. And then when you roll your window down, you say to him, do you still want me to step out the car? He may say yes. Step out the car and listen to him very carefully. He may say, go to the back of the car and put your hands on the hood. What you should say at this point is, there a problem, officer? Because, see, you have to understand, he just may be a sadistic cop. It's hard for me to tell you how to view this in your mind's eye. But it's easy for me to tell you that the result that you want is to get home. You have that in your mind because you must have it in your heart. You must have it in every action that you take, every movement you make. Because now this is starting to elevate someplace you don't want it to go. So you conform and always be looking around. That's why you want to get in a well-lit place. You can see their badge. They can see you. You take away that air of their image of fear of you because you're doing the right thing. Now, the reason why I'm taking you along this course of action is because right now, at this point, is where these circumstances change. Absolutely. Because some people get offended. I got to get out the car. Next thing you know, what you want to search? See, emotion can put things on an altogether different course. And that is not what you want. You want to be able to stay the course to get home. It's interesting, though. It makes no difference how you really approach this when it comes to what has been happening to brothers and sisters during police stops. So that's why it is even more imperative that you focus on your imaginative image of self so that you get through this. Because, see, we cannot predict the nature of human beings. Never forget, you are dealing with the most destructive human being in the history of mankind. And he has demonstrated it on every level of life. So your focus must never be off the prize, which is to get home. So as he speaks, you listen. And only do what he tells you to. Don't offer any extra information. Don't give him anything to twist or turn. And always remember that any sudden movements that he can interpret as being defensive or offensive could end your life. I'm hoping y'all are starting to get this picture. Because understand this. We have been victimized by these people from day one. I'm telling you about a scenario that I had to live through. And in doing so, I can get on the radio today. See, actually, I'm speaking it from an individual point of view, but I have my wife and children in the car. And they were surprised at how precise I was about telling them what to do and how to do it while the gun was pointed at my head, as my wife very clearly states. And it was more than one. It was like three officers across the street, one officer in front of the car, one officer behind the car, and the officer that was on the opposite side. And I had to tell my children everything to do.
And the dog.
And, yeah, we had a dog here too. But literally, these things, although you may not realize it, can save your life. But you must see it from the perspective of your mind's eye. And the reason being is because it will save your life. It will get you home. And that is your intent. In my situation, they got me out the car and handcuffed me. I couldn't even get the handcuffs on. That's how feeble-minded these young rookies were. So do you think I was going to take a chance with all of these guns pointing at us to do something stupid? And I had my wife and children in the car. And guess what? This was 10 years ago. And to this day, my wife is sitting beside me reminding me every aspect of it. But these are the tools that I had to begin teaching them then. So now I'm telling you today what they had us do at that time. They had my children get out the back of the car, sit on the ground. They had my wife get out the passenger side, sit on the ground. They had me in handcuffs at the back of the car, and I'm telling you, there had to be at least six weapons pointed at us. The only thing I said is, you are making a mistake. Well, we're looking for somebody that fits your description. We ran the car. The car didn't give us back the information from the DMV. I said, I know. I just purchased a car today. I went to work. I was on my way home. I had the temporary registration, which I already gave to you. I said, and we were going to register it tomorrow because we have a 7-day period. We transferred the tags off of our old car to the new car. So literally, we were within the confines of the law. But I was only talking to one. So I had to make sure that none of the other officers pointing guns at us misinterpreted my language or my body movement. And guess what? After about 40 minutes, they came to realize I wasn't the person. They took the handcuffs off us because they handcuffed my wife and the children. They went into their amenities, it's a police business, blah, 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 which meant nothing to me. But because I didn't lose my focus, regardless of how high the pressure went or how low the pressure went, I've always spoke clearly, and I made sure whoever I was speaking to, whether it was my wife, my children, or the police, that they had very clear understanding of what I was saying. You see, when you work from the purpose of achieving that which you set out to do, it must first come through your imagination to achieve what it is, the result you want. Now, my wife is reminding me, one of the reasons why it kind of worked so well with my children is because when they were small, we used to play this game called the freeze game. So I would be walking with them, and all of a sudden I'll say, freeze, and they had to stop, and they couldn't say nothing. Understand, this is like from the age of three up. You know how children want to say, what's wrong? What's going on? I always taught them to say nothing. Not because I was preparing them for this time. No. I was preparing them to be a family unit. But I also knew that in through this game, I could teach them some life skills that may work out for them one day. And the core ingredient with the child is you must be obedient to the circumstance. And I'm going to tell you something. To this day, when they think about that, they said, you know what? My dad has so much on the ball that when that time came, we fell right in the line. I mean, it wasn't a question, nor did we question. And the best part about it was we went home. Do you understand that? We went home alive. And that's why it is so important for you to understand what I'm saying when I say you must see it through your imaginative image to receive what it is, the result that you want. So let's get back to the cop in the car. And he's now got you outside the car, and he's saying, can I search you? Well, officer, I understand you pulled me over because I swerved, but I really haven't anything on me. Then the officer's going to say to you, then you wouldn't mind me searching you. At this point, it is an invasion of your privacy, but he does have that authority now due to the Patriot Act and the National Authorization of Defense Act. They have that authority. Make no mistake. So at this point, you can say to them, I would rather you not, but if this will give you a more conclusive as to the circumstance, I would rather you have a warrant. Now, you have to understand, when you say that, you trigger something. All right? Now, if he's cool, he'll say, okay, well, I understand. I mean, by this time, they should say you're an upstanding citizen, a taxpayer, and they're going to judge all of that by the time they pull you over because as soon as they take your driver's license and go back, I don't know if you know this or not, but it tells them if you're working or not. It tells them where you live. It tells them almost your Social Security number. And with a few more taps on the keyboard, they can find that out. So literally, they will know whether you're someone that they ought to be forewarned about or just another citizen. But whatever they come back with, remember, the sole point of importance, the sole point of importance is getting home. That's it. So keep in mind that the image that you have of yourself must not wither, must not change, and must not allow this officer to induce you into a state of emotion. Because the moment you do, you change the dynamic of the circumstance in his favor. And guess what? Anytime they have it in their favor, you're at fault. And the sad part about this is that a lot of you may have experienced this already. Now, if Dave was here, what Dave would tell you is police procedure. And he could literally bring correction to whatever I said was wrong. And I was hoping he'd be here. I don't know what his schedule's like because we're different worlds. And I respect his and he respects mine. So I do know that certain things about the Tando show tonight I didn't do, like the current events and that sort of thing. And you may have been looking forward to that, but you can always go to the Tando page and catch up. But my main concern is that we prepare ourselves for what is to come. And we are slowly but surely moving to a police state. I don't know, but if you look at the Tando page, I believe the illustrious Attorney General was announcing something about world police, which I would think that she didn't have that power, but when I think back to what I said to you yesterday in reference to tonight's show, they think they have that power. Now, for those of you who didn't know what I said was, this week, Donald Trump talked about the viability of NATO because so many other countries were not paying their membership fees, and the United States is paying the bulk of the fees. Well, that's because NATO is a corporate organization. They want you to think it represents the countries. But those countries aren't paying in, so the people who are paying in are running the organization. Make no mistake. They know exactly what they're doing. So that is why it is so important for your preparation process for the time that is about to come. Be totally, psychologically, physically, and totally emotionally under your control. And why did I say totally emotionally? Because that is going to be their trigger for you. Believe me. And if you fall for it, they will victimize you. Now, for some of you out there who might think, oh, that won't happen to me, you should ask the Japanese. You know, they just celebrated the greatest day of mourning. For those of you who don't know, I think 2 days ago or 3 days ago, the United States government dropped an atom bomb on Hiroshima. It literally eviscerated 100,000 people. And then the after effect probably affected 500,000 people. You would think that was enough. But 2 days later, and this is the logic, well, we dropped that bomb using plutonium. We have another bomb that we want to see the result of that. Well, you've already devastated the country, but we want to understand which is the most powerful. So they dropped the bomb of another different kind of material. I can't even think of the name of it. I think one was uranium and the other one was plutonium. So understand, the first attack on Hiroshima was an uranium nuclear bomb, a uranium nuclear bomb. The second attack that was on Nagasaki was a plutonium nuclear bomb. Never in the history of man has death been so full scale nor so complete.
Brother David.
Ladies and gentlemen, yes. Yes, brother.
I was just reading an article about that, and the reason they used two different bombs is because they wanted to see which one would have the most devastation. So that was an admission to murder right there. I mean, that's just
absolutely.
So sinister, man. They didn't even need to even drop the bombs from what MacArthur was saying, General MacArthur. They just wanted to keep a figurehead emperor, just like England got, you know, the queen. They just wanted to keep, but they were going to give up.
And
dropping them bombs, and then they ran tests on human beings. Man, and these are war crimes to the highest order, man. This is why I don't respect this corporation.
So you see, brothers and sisters, when I say that we must operate on a higher level of self, it is an imperative. Now, I was speaking about one thing. Scotty came in on the same thing and brought clarity to you about it. And then his bringing clarity also told you that it was a choice to them, not just to devastate them one time, but they wanted to do it again to see how a different material would affect the devastation on another level. Now, these are one of the same beings that are stopping you in your car. If you are not operating on the highest order of self-awareness, this may be a life-changing moment because they'll do it in a minute. I don't know if you have heard it the other day, but I believe just yesterday another Zimmerman incident happened. This guy wasn't even a part of no neighborhood watch. He proclaimed himself a neighborhood watch and said there was a brother running through his neighborhood, so he shot him because he thought he committed a crime. Do you hear the insolence of ignorance in that statement? I thought he committed a crime. Now, I didn't do the follow-up on that because I was just so, it just disgusted me so much. I don't even know if they arrested him or not. They should have. Because that was murder.
North Carolina, I think he was arrested. I'm pretty sure he was arrested and charged with murder or manslaughter or something like that. He shot at somebody and missed them and killed somebody else, from what I understand. Hmm. He called himself firing. Well, his statement was he fired a warning shot, and somebody got shot that wasn't even the person he was talking about, from what I've gathered. But I haven't had much time to watch the local news today. But that's what I've heard from people I've come across.
And to think he even, here's the mentality. He even thought he had that type of authority. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? He thought he had the authority to kill somebody. So you know what that is in reality? For those of you who don't know, let me bring that very clear to you. That is white privilege. That's all. The arrogance to think that you have the right to proclaim life or death on somebody's life based on their skin color.
Also,
go ahead, Scotty.
It may have been premeditated. It just came back to me that the victim, the person killed, was like part of this cookout. It was like a block party. Which they have black parties in cities and you know, or different places, but it was like some kind of cookout or something, and maybe he didn't like, you know what I'm saying, all these people out in the street, and you know how a party sounds. So, but that's another element to it. It just came to me.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we're about to go to break right now. I'm encouraging you, everybody or anybody, pick up that phone, because I'm going to tell you something. Our time is getting short. What do I mean by that? I mean that as they begin to clap down, as these elections come closer, as these racist people, and I'm going to tell you, don't make a difference what candidates choose, get to that grand finale where they're in the ring head to head, you're going to see some of the most arrogant humans to ever walk the face of the earth with an ignorance that cannot even be measured. So listen, after the break, please pick up your phones, take advantage of the opportunity to ask the question that you may want answered or what you should do, but do connect, because you may be dealing with a scenario you will need some info on. So after the commercial, hit us back. This is Brother Davis coming at you. Peace.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Welcome back. I'm hoping that you're going to your telephones, because I'm going to tell you something. A lot of the things that are on my mind, I really can't go into, and the reason why I can't go into them is because it's so much, I'd have to lay it out to you stage by stage, and I really don't have the time to do that. Why? Because I want you to understand that this situation I'm telling you about isn't something that's going to happen to just one of us. Anybody within sight of my voice can be victimized by this. I'm telling you, my personal experience. So if I've experienced it, other black people have experienced it. What makes us the exception as black people is that we have a level of personal awareness that we can tap into if you want to wake it up. So for those of you who haven't really grasped it yet, let's go on, let's move the scenario on. So we're at the police car, and he asks you, can he search you? And you told him preferred to have a warrant and this and that. So now he's getting upset. You cannot change your tone. Let him get upset. Because the bottom line is he still has to supply a warrant. So he says, well, can I look in your car? Under the same circumstances, officer. Because literally you're not being confrontational. You're just exercising a right that you have. He's jumping all around you. He's probably hollering and fussing in your face. You have to learn that these are the same tactics they use when they teach you about interrogation. Absolutely. And see, if you have never been taught about interrogation or never been victimized by interrogation, they do this relentlessly. Why? Because they want to get whatever information you will give them freely. So remember, if you give them nothing, they cannot use what you say against you. Does that sound familiar? Well, let me tell you, that's a major role in the memorandum rights that they're supposed to read to you that literally you hear very little about nowadays. And the reason why is because they don't want you to know where they are. They want you to feel like you are the victim. And that is their intent, to make you feel like the victim to the degree of victimizing you. But don't lose fact or focus on what you're trying to do. You're trying to get home. So if the officer says, well, put your hands behind your back, you're stuck. Because you still got to go through the process. But at least you're not being confrontational. You don't have to be like it's a shoving match, although he may lean on you. He may push on you. You know why? Because most people that are police officers, that have what's called an artificial authority, a lot of them are police officers because they're weak-minded people. So they think that when they have this authority given to them, that they have a right to exercise it in any manner that they see fit. They can't, but they do. And the reason why they do is because the system has already decided the fate that's going to happen to them, even if they make a mistake. And it's shutting down more and more avenues that work to your advantage, even if they make a mistake. So literally, we must think and we must react. And we must stay focused on getting home. So now that this has escalated and the policeman's getting all upset and he's jumping around and you are just standing there with your handcuffs, literally, in the light. Remember, you pull over to a bright spot because literally, they always think that there's always an error when nobody's watching. Well, one of the things that work out to your advantage, that is in most areas where there are lights, there are cameras. And you know what? There are a lot of areas now where they have sound sensors, where they could literally pick up the sound of what's going on. Or they can narrow the sound of a gunshot down to a block or two. But these are all purposeful for them in what they call the crime control. Well, you see, crime was never really the problem when it comes to traffic stop. See, it is not a crime to have a light out. It is not a crime if you swerve in the road. Then why allow him to elevate it to the degree where it can be a life or death situation? But we live in these times. Do you realize you could be speeding down the street at 100 miles an hour and a cop pulls you over and it's still not a crime? You just broke a traffic law. That is not a criminal offense. But if you don't know the law, you're in no position to say bip. Because when you do, he can interpret that any way he wants to. That's why you hear me when I talk. I try to keep one tone and one tone alone so that you can't misinterpret what my intent is. And then when the officer speaks, you listen tentatively so you can do exactly or answer only what he asks. And a lot of times they'll ask stuff like, is this your driver's license? If you make a mistake and say, no, I mean yes, all of a sudden you give him reason to inquire more. So if you just nod your head, then he'll say, I can't understand head nod. Well, then now you have the time to be clear with what you say. Yes, officer, that is my license. But you have to use everything to your advantage if you're going to live through these circumstances today. You know, it's sad that I'm literally talking to you about your imaginative self in a situation like that when I should be really telling you how you could use your imaginative self to elevate yourself beyond these circumstances. But if you're not here, I can't get you to that point. That's why I have to give you basic stuff. Listen, I've done this with my children. We are living in these type of dangerous times, they are more dangerous now than they were when white people controlled slaves. You know why? Because they knew that what is that back then. They knew they'd get away with it. Now, they know that there's a greater possibility they're going to get away with it than not. And they're even more devious because guess what? They have what's called weaponry. Different story. You see, back then, if somebody got upset with you as a slave, they might beat you with a whip or whatever. But now they kill you in an instant, in the back of an eye. They don't even see the connection of how it affects the loved ones in your life. But yet, when something like this happens to one of them police officers, oh, he had a wife, he had two children, now they have no father. You don't never hear about that when they kill a black man in the street. Like he don't have those same things. Do you see the degree of importance that I'm trying to put this on you? Because, see, in reality, if you are the one that is laying in the street, they take that officer off the street, put him behind the desk, and he still gets paid. Your family gets nothing. Whatever your supply was to your family is now gone. And they're left with the emotional wounds of not having you there. And it gets deeper. Because in most cases, if you are shot in the street, the scavengers come. And they scavenge your body. And they hold your body until they're done scavenging it. And then they'll tell you it was their right as the coroner to determine death. Well, hell, 6 bullets? It's not hard to determine what the death is. But you know what? Scavengers are looking for more than the 6 bullets. These are the times in which we live, my brothers and sisters. Now, I'm encouraging y'all to call because as it stands now, I don't know if you know, so let me tell you, in various parts of the country, there may be anywhere from 40,000 to 400,000 caskets. Literally. Just waiting. Why do I use that term? Because no one wants to say what they are, or no one wants to interpret what they're there for, but everybody sees there's something wrong in the country. And the reason why they don't speak about it is because they're waiting for the people who know to speak, and they're not. So in our mind's eye, dealing with a country that has never given any aspect of us as a human being respect, we have to assume that there is something that is not well, that is well organized, that is not planned for select people. Now, the biggest problem is that a large predominant part of white America thinks they're exempt. They are not. You see, genetically modified organisms kill everything that consumes it eventually. So, no, there's no exceptions. But yet, because of corporate separation, it seems like we cannot come together and openly converse about the destructive nature of our history so that we can pinpoint the racist system that is at work. Why? Because the predominant amount of people feel that they are privileged by this system. They are not. They feel that they can victimize by this system. And when they get a chance, they try to. But we have to understand that there is more we can do. And we have to do it. We have to build alliances. We have to openly speak and discuss these things. And we must take those people who aside, who always say, oh, no, we're friends. Well, if we're friends, why aren't you speaking against them? Do you have the understanding that I have? And if not, let's sit down and converse. Because I would like to know that the person that smiles in my face every day and calls me their counterpart or their friend sincerely means that. And when you hit them like that, you don't have to go that deep. Because guess what? If you don't know them off the job, then you darn sure don't know them on the job. That's the image they're projecting to you. But if you weren't there, they wouldn't have to project nothing at all. So it is our responsibility, it is imperative that we give white America to understand you and your silence are in agreement with all of this that is going on. And that's why you hear Commander Woodwork every now and then say, well, I don't agree with it. Well, what are you doing about it? Are you adding your voice to ours? Because I have a neighbor over here whose son is gone, who she couldn't even bury. But when she got him, he had no bones or no vital organs. The coroner had to tell him, don't touch the body. So how sincere are you? We have to put the cards on the table, y'all. Y'all ain't calling? That's all right. Because when you get in this situation, you're going to be thinking, now what did Brother David say? Because guess what? I've always said you shouldn't be listening to Black Talk Radio without a pencil and a piece of paper, minimally. Because there's too much information being given. There's too much information being given about our communities. There's too much information being given about our communities that are being incarcerated. There's too much information being given about what the police is doing in our communities to our children. And if we are not being abreast of that, we play the same role that Democrats have been playing on us for years. Oh, listen, if you vote us in, we'll look out for your best interest. Then when they get in, they don't do a damn thing. And the Republicans will tell you off the top, well, we ain't doing a damn thing. So everybody was elated when President Obama went in, and now we at the end of his term, and you know what? He ain't did a damn thing. So when are you going to realize that it's going to take you? It's going to require something of you. So lift yourself up to your imaginary vision in your mind and do something and let your body follow suit. And we will be able to at least strike a blow in the circumstance of tyranny in which we live. Because I'm going to tell you, you know what gets me when people say, well, you know what, I'm going to die on my feet. I don't want to die. I'm going to be very clear. Dying is not in my game plan. Now, I believe that I can achieve the impossible. Don't get me wrong. But how can I believe I can achieve the impossible if death is in my plan? It don't make sense, y'all. We have to move forward, and we have to move forward now. When I hear stuff like, oh, well, you know, we can't get together. That's a weak-minded individual. We don't want you in our group. Because you don't think you could do what all it requires of you is to pick up a telephone call or come to a meeting or give a few dollars. But you know what? You don't believe that you can learn. Because if one person teaches another person, we literally are operating in an African principle of each one teach one. But if you're going to sit back and say, oh, what we can't do is not we, it's you. You can do. And guess what? You are not me. So when change starts to come, whether it's for your advantage or your disadvantage. You only got you to blame. Because I'm going to be out here doing whatever I can to wake up people, to let them know that we have not been tied to the post. We will not go quietly in tonight. We will not stand by and let someone victimize us based on their ability to have money. And the sad part about it is that the value that is given to money is given by you. A man once told me, you know how you can be bought off? I said, no, I was a young man, Dad, you know what I mean? He said, I need a newspaper. Can you go over there and get it for me? And he said, here's a $50 bill. Keep the change. And I took the $50 bill thinking, okay, I'm going to keep this change. And just as I turned around, he said, you've been bought. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you was willing to do what I wanted you to do for the change and that money. And I realized that without even thinking of a price, he set a price and he met what he was trying to achieve with the price he set. So guess what? Our whole political system is sold out. And if you don't believe it, listen, look at the laws they're passing. And I'm not speaking to just African Americans here. I'm speaking to all Americans here. Anybody within earshot. The system of America last year, the upper 3% made more money than the lower 90%. Now, that is phenomenal. That is theft and deception on the highest level. So we got work to do, y'all, and we got to start with ourselves. So when you feeling good, you kick back, and your little girl comes in and sits down and says, Daddy, what are we going to do tomorrow? What you going to say? Because, see, I'm going to tell you something. I teach my grandchildren that it's up to us to make the world great. Not America, not our people, the world. You see, this was given to us, and we have neglected it immensely. We got work to do. And it's going to require as much of me as it's going to require of you. And for those of you who think, well, I'll let somebody else do it, not everybody's going to get through it. So in your time of need, we'll let somebody else do it. Because you didn't see, it's your responsibility to initiate change, to do something to initiate change. We have to take our lives back. Get off them in front of that damn TV set. They don't teach you nothing. You know what? It's a cheap amusement park, literally. It amuses you to the degree that you stare at. You ever see those things that go round and round with the lights on and all of a sudden you're hypnotized by? That's what it's designed to do. There's more programming coming out of that TV set, audially and visually, and subliminally, than you can begin to imagine. And I've talked to you about that on many occasions. The sad part about it is that a lot of you don't believe it, and you sit in front of that thing, and you get on Facebook and these other media scripts talking about Empire. Empire is the most debasing program on TV to a black person because it has every stereotype in it, and you love it. You know why? Because you're weak-minded. You're so weak-minded that literally it's entertaining to you. And you know the sad part about that? Is that you don't see that in your life, but it's there somewhere. And all they're doing is getting your attention so that they know where you are at a certain hour today. Period. And you know what? Those who they don't know where they are, chances are, they're looking for them. Because those are the ones they worry about. What are they doing? Who are they talking to? What word are they spreading? Whose life are they changing? You see, we have to change, my brothers and sisters. The devil don't look for the people that he controls. He's looking for the people that he don't control. And the sad part about it is that if you're in front of that set, you're in control. He got you well under control. But if you're doing things to make yourself better, understand how I said that? To make yourself better, that will come out in other people becoming better around you. That is the nature of influence. You're either going to have a good influence or you're going to have a bad influence. So once again, I'm imploring you, call me. Open this telephone line and ask those questions. Because I'm going to tell you something. I would love to say Wise Wednesdays will always be here. But there are demands on all of our lives. And the demands change immensely. I'm going to tell you, I know Brother David talked about Dr. Sabi. And I had the opportunity to be in his company. And, it was very profound. But now I'll never get that opportunity again. Are y'all understanding here? I want you to pick up your telephones and dial the number. Ask the question or offer insight. Because what you don't get, you may need in a crucial moment. And if you don't have it, it may not go your way. And if it does not go your way, it changes the dynamic of your whole family. If you think that you can't do nothing, think of the elderly people in your neighborhood. Those whose houses are falling down. Do they have air when it's hot outside? Do they eat on a regular basis? Could you just drop by and knock on the door? Miss Lizzie, I haven't seen you outside watering your flowers lately. Is everything all right? Because, see, Miss Lizzie might have had a problem in her house. And if we are not going to be compassionate enough to do something, we're going to continue to sit in front of that TV and do nothing. And we can't just go to people that look like us, because we need to build alliances. And in building alliances, humanity must reach out to humanity. There is no human, no one human, that is going to save humanity. If it is done, and understand how I said that, if it is done, it's going to require something of everybody. And I'm more than willing to do my share. I'm willing to do my share, and I'm willing to do others' share. But I'm not willing to do it for somebody who's sitting in front of a TV show. Because if I find that out, you don't ever have to worry about me knocking on your door again. Because, see, I don't want to disturb your TV show. So, Brother Scotty, we're here to go to another commercial. I want everybody to know this is Brother Davis coming at you on Wise Wednesdays, giving you insights and understandings that will be tools on your road in life. So hit me up on the telephone and let us all know that you're listening to the show, or you can do better than that if you'd like to make a contribution to Black Talk Radio. Every time you make a positive gesture in a positive way, you'll get positive results. This is Brother Davis. I'm going to come back after the break. And at that point in time, I'd really like for you guys to call. Blow the phones up and let me hear what's on your mind. Thank you.
Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Radio Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
All right, welcome back, brothers and sisters. It is good to be me, and I love being alive because every day I go out, I try to do something that's going to make a difference in my life or somebody else's life. Scotty, is there any calls?
Not this time. I will let you know.
I appreciate you, brother. All right, listen, I'm going to give you some insights on how to do these things that people think are so hard to do, okay? Well, when I got up this morning, I understand now, I'm a cross-country truck driver. Well, we're a cross-country truck driving team. And as I started my day, I started meditating. I got my meditation in. I visualized how I want my day to go. My wife was sleepy because she drove all night. And as I began to drive in the morning, I stopped, got me a nice cup of hot water, and I had me some ginger tea. And then I got to my stop, and it was crazy. You know, you're into the program. I'm in Atlanta now, so you're into the program, and all these things are going on. And I got to check in to see. I got $125,000 worth of meat bread products in my truck. So I'm going in here, and I'm talking to these people about how they want to disseminate this, where they want me to go. And I go in and come out, and there's seven or eight different trucks. There's about 30, 40 stalls. And everybody's trying to back up into a stall, and they're having problems because guess what? Nobody wants to help anybody. So I said, okay. So I get out, and I go to the one the father's back. I help him to get in. Come to the second one, I help him to get in. By the time I got to the third one, other truckers were getting out the truck and helping other truckers in. You see how contagious it gets. You see, when people see you doing something, they want to be a part of it. And they don't know that they want to be a part of it. They just seeing how much quicker things would go if they became a part of it. Okay, so I finally get into the stall, and truckers are. They go in and check in, they come out, and they're conversating a little bit. I don't like to stand and conversate a lot because when my wife sleeps, I like to be close to her because, it's just a strange world we live in. I don't have to take any chances. So I get in the truck, and I'm reading my book, and the reason why I'm reading the book, it's because I'm edifying my mind, all right? And the book I'm reading is on a Qigong right now. But I'm edifying my mind so that I can bring another process into my body. So now my wife got these two Yorkies, and they're sitting up in the window looking at everything, And one of the unique things about today was there was a Mexican guy who was pulling in beside me, and he kind of got out and didn't know where to go. So I gestured to him to go down here and go into the door down there, and he went down there. And as you see, when you don't speak Spanish, that's a barrier. So when he came back, he gestured by waving, that sort of thing. So I'm sitting in my truck, and I'm reading, and he's constantly looking over at me, and I wouldn't think he could pick up on that. But at the end of the day, after I've seen, and trucks, when they unload a truck, they put on a red light, meaning you can't move your truck. Then when the truck's unloaded, they put on a green light, meaning that you can go. But you really can't go till you get your paperwork and make sure everything is in order. So I get out my truck to go in to get my paperwork, and the guy looks at me and he says, "You like to read." Now, this is the trip, because I hadn't said that to this guy because he spoke Spanish, I spoke English. And I said, "Yes, I enjoy it," just like that. He said, "I don't speak very much English, but I do know when someone's reading." I said, "Oh, thank you." And we went our separate ways. Once again, because of what the influence was, he saw, believe me, he probably thought that black people don't read, because that is one of the stigmas that society teaches. They perpetuate these things. Okay? So we're always coming or working. Okay, if you got, all right, I'll take the call, Scotty. Welcome to Tando Radio. This is Brother David speaking.
Hello.
Hello, sister. How are you? What is your name and where are you calling from?
I'm Lynette. I'm from North Carolina. North Dakota.
Oh, excellent, sister. What is your question or what would you like to offer to the next topic?
Okay. You mentioned empire, and this is something that I wanted to talk about for a while. I did a series of artwork tracing the Jim Crow stereotypes, right? And I was told by some black people that, oh, we don't want to hear that, or we don't want to see that. And I said, but you see that all the time you watch something in the media. Every single time you watch a show or movie, anything, a video with so-called black people in these, I like to say more, but black people, you see these Jim Crow stereotypes just because they put them in these. Their skin is lighter, they're not just black, and they don't have the big red lips. That doesn't lessen the fact that they're still the same Jim Crow stereotypes, and you can name each and every one of them that they play. And but you mentioned empire, and that's true. And also, another thing is, I think people might get mad about this, but Leslie Jones. Now, all this hype over Ghostbusters, and the white people saying, that white guy saying that that was a cool show, but the thing was, Leslie Jones was being a stereotype. And there was a time when black people really were incensed when they saw stereotypes. Now they promote them and support them. They think you're supposed to act like that. Leslie Jones' character is a queen of character. You know, and also, did you notice how come Leslie Jones, you know, all the white females could be these PhDs? So Leslie Jones could not be a PhD, her character. And if you watch the movie, I mean, she is being a she is the coon character. It's as simple as that. And so, but black people are so incensed by this, and I didn't like that. The comments about Leslie Jones, I mean, that's just plain sexism, and how she looks has nothing, how she thinks she looks has nothing to do with the equation. But I'm going back to say the support and promoting, I mean, black people should have been paying attention. Well, they were paying attention, but no one stated that that's true. She is playing a coon character. Empire is there every time. I mean, come on. Every time you turn on one of these shows, there is one of these stereotypical Jim Crow stereotypes. They even tried, but the funny thing about it is that if you're not one of these stereotypes, you are not even understood, especially to white people. If you can't fit into one of those little boxes, they are scared of you or threatened by you, unless, of course, you're the nigger stereotype or the sapphire, angry black woman stereotype. Then that's a different thing, okay? If you're a coon, or if you're a mammy, or even if you're a Jezebel, because I'll even say scandal, and nobody is paying attention,
Sister, let me help you, because
okay.
I see that these things have an effect on you. All right, and
yes.
I understand that because that is a part of the program.
Wait, let me say this. They have an effect on me because they have an effect not just on me, but they have an effect subconsciously on people. Most people don't realize it. You know, these caricatures are so ingrained in the DNA that was started in the 1850s, the Jim Crow caricatures, to dehumanize the people, and they're still used to dehumanize the people. The people, not even a caricature now is the weed smoking Rasta. Those are modern day stereotypes. The hoodie, the black man who wears the hoodie, and you see the effects of that. So these ingrained in everyone's psyche that one of the major reasons why black people are being dehumanized now with these stereotypical caricatures all through the media. And that's why it's accepted that you can dehumanize people. These people, they're not even human, so it's all right to shoot them. Even if you can wear a hoodie and it's all right to shoot you. So that's what I really wanted.
Okay. Now, I've been very rather patient with you because a lot of that in reference to that TV shows and stuff like that, that's apparent. That has nothing to do with a brother wearing a hoodie being victimized. And the sad part about that is that when you get so caught up in TV where it has that much control, or should I say influence, over your decisions, then literally you're doing exactly what they want you to do. Our true concern is about survival, then literally we're being dismantled by TV. So I appreciate the courtesy of your call, but in reality, what I was speaking was in reference to self-image today. So whatever white people decide to put on TV, since I don't watch it, it's really not important. Yes, brother.
Yeah, let me just play devil's advocate. We do have another caller. Caller, I want to thank you. I'm sorry, ma'am. I had to put you on mute because we have more live programming, so I had to keep the flow of the show going. We do have another caller. We want to make sure they have time to speak as well.
Thank you.
What I interpreted from her, and I would agree with her, because that is the perspective of Black Talk Media Project. She didn't really say that she was caught up in it. She's talking about what's being projected to the masses. And while we don't watch it, Brother Davis, we're in the minority. I mean, I have to watch it because I have to know what's going on, what the corporate media is talking about news. The entertainment programs, no, I don't watch them. But she is correct, and she's talking about the impact that it's having not on us, but also the impact it's having on these white racist cracker cops that will kill us because they do believe that we are this caricature, you know, that
absolutely
are in the media. So
I agreed with her to that extent, but that is to the only extent because I don't put my time there. I understand it's an attribute of what you do. All right,
so
but in reality,
how do we that problem? Because we're talking about tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of people. And like I say all the time about white supremacy, it don't matter what you think or how you think about yourself or what you call yourself or how you live in. Because like you talking about these beings that we are forced to interact with, when we're forced to interact, it's about what they think about us that determines whether they're going to gun us down or not.
And that's the purpose of the show, so that we can be able to have an understanding of the danger that we are in when we allow ourselves to be lulled into a state of emotion.
Let's move to the next caller. I think it's this area code is 404.
Okay,
oh,
caller.
Hi, Team Davies.
Yes.
This is Jada from Atlanta. How's everyone doing, Brother Dave, Brother Scotty?
We're blessed. This is Brother Davis.
That's awesome. You know, I usually call in on Wednesdays, especially when you brought everyone's attention about the GMO and how it's destructive to our community, to our DNA, to our spirituality, to our mindset. The question is, I know I'll speak on behalf of myself as being, I'm an at-home wife, and that was a choice because I wanted to be a strong influence on my children. I didn't want the world to have input, and I didn't want others, especially because the image is very important to me, being a black woman, and me being that image that they come home to every day is important to me, and me sitting down doing homework, making sure they have proper meals, making sure they're prayed over at night and different things in that nature. And I also do it with neighbors' kids, you know, not just my own, making sure that, because their parents work all the time, and it's only by His grace that I'm able to do that. Yeah, it is difficult, but I guess my question is, how do I, like, introduce, like, some of the issues that are going on, whether it's making sure that our young black males are, you know, being taught properly, or, and our young daughters are being taught properly. How would I do that and project that information to neighbors? Because a lot of them are turned off when I even do, when I do approach them, or I'll just say, hey, you know, maybe you want to do this way, or even when it comes to parenting, because, you know, your first teacher is at home, and I teach my children that, you know. So how would I project that information to my neighbors? Or, you know,
that,
even
that is an excellent question, sister. And we have to understand, first of all, not everybody will get it. All right.
Okay.
Now, you heard me speak about how I worked with my children when they were young, so that when they came up and grew up, they could fall in line in reference to the things that showed interest in their concern. And when I say show interest in their concern, just like you are being the quintessential, and you put it very eloquently, mother, literally, what you are, just the woman that you are describing is what they consider to be now a part of the past. In reality, that was the best era for the children's growth. You were an on-hand parent. And see, the best part about that is that your relationship with your children is enduring every day through your interaction. So if I had an opportunity to be able to, well, when I was coming up, my wife kind of did the same thing, only she had a daycare that she ran during the day. But you see, our children always sat down and dinner tonight at night, and we had family conversations. See, I understand exactly what you're saying, my sister. And I'm going to tell you, your children are truly blessed that you have, that they have such an insightful mother. You have to understand, not everybody is prepared for the truth. So those people who are not prepared for the truth, you got to move on. Just remember, though, that time comes when they wake up, they're going to call you. And you can't do it for them, but give them the insight so that they can go ahead and do their own due diligence and put their own program together and use you as a consultant to help them feel where they are in their process, because you've already demonstrated that it can be done. So don't let those people who really don't understand and don't gravitate to the truth the way you project it get bother you, because you are doing what is right in the circumstances that we are in today. So if my hat goes off to you, sister, and please call anytime and add to our conversation.
Wow. God bless you, Team Davies. I love your wife. She's awesome. Y'all just awesome.
All right.
I'm so grateful. And God bless
you.
Y'all have a great one.
Same to you. We love you also. Bye-bye. Is there any other calls, brother?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let me pick up.
The telephone number is 641. I tried to give it out earlier, but I it's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound, hit *6 and 1 to comment on air.
Okay, let me remind everybody that we at one time were the child in the process of learning, and we learn from the examples that were before us. And that process never changes. In every aspect of the animal kingdom, that process is alive and well. What is different about the human kingdom is that we literally have a spiritual attribute. Now, that spiritual attribute helps us evolve on a spiritual level, or it can become neglected. What do I say when it's become neglected? That means that when we decide to choose something else as our direction instead of our purpose, personal growth as our purpose. And literally, when you hear, when I hear people like the sister who just called from Atlanta, she allows personal growth to be her purpose in the life of her children. But yet, the fruit of that has not come home. That fruit will come and bear gifts to her over and over again because of the time that she's putting in now in that manner. And, sister, I hope that those people who just look at you from the outside, because they never know what's going on the inside, Those who look at you from the outside literally understand that they can do what you're doing. They just have to make the decisions to serve their purpose, just like you made the decisions to serve yours. This is Brother Davis on Wise Wednesdays, and I'm trying to get anybody right now. We got about maybe 7 minutes left. Anybody to call and open the door to somebody who may feel as though they cannot. Because at this opportune time, we are beginning to be blessed and cursed simultaneously. And now let me explain that for you. Get it twisted. We're blessed with the fact that now there are more people waking up to understand the importance of their own self-reliance, as well as we're being cursed by a system that has decided to target us indiscriminately and without warning. So it is upon us to see the imaginative image of self and being able to rearrange things in order for us to achieve a greater level of love, wisdom, and understanding with not only with us and our people, but with humanity. Because if there's no humans, there's no humanity. This is Brother Davis coming at you. You might have 2 more minutes if you want anybody want to get that phone call in, but this is no longer an option. This is very quickly tilting on a survival scale. Extinction is a plan for us as a people. For those of you who don't understand what I'm talking about, in America they got the King Alfred plan. So these things are true. These are lies. And they're operating this. What you see going on right now, this is the NATO Agenda 21 that was been put together by a handful of people who literally mean nothing.
Brother Davis.
And all they got. Yes, I'm go sorry. Ahead, brother.
We only got like 8 minutes left. There's a caller, 803.
All right, come on, caller. Take your name and your interest. My name is Brother Davis.
Peace, Brother Davis. Peace, Brother Scotty. This is Max Parth. This is New Abolitionist Radio.
Peace, Brother Max. Peace.
Indeed, man. And I just want to share some words that have been helping me these past few days to continue on. And it's a quote by a fellow poet and abolitionist, Harriet Beecher Stowe, who said, "When you get into a tight place and everything goes against you until it seems that you cannot hold on for a minute longer, never give up then. For that is just the place and the time when the tide will turn."
Absolutely. Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. That is the wisdom that we really need to get our people to understand.
Yes.
I appreciate you, Brother Max.
Indeed, brother. I continue listening. Thank you for what you're doing. Keep up the good work.
Yes, I admire what you do, and I always listen. Even when I can't call in sometimes, I'm listening. Okay, Brother Scotty, I guess we're at the back end. This is Brother Davis of Tando Radio Wise Wednesdays. Let me say this. In order to be a ruler, you must take control. If you do not take control, you just fall victim like all the other followers. This is Brother Davis. Remember, it's always better to be prepared than to be victimized by someone else's preparation. Scotty, let me turn it over to you.
Yes, consequences for the...
All right, Brother Davis, thank you.
Peace.
All right, that's for Tando Radio Show tonight. New Abolitionist Radio will be coming on at 8 o'clock p.m. shortly, so stay tuned.
Have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. slicing cake.
Save the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Save the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing
cake. Gaddafi didn't give up.